This is KHOI, Story City, Ames, and surrounding areas.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in, as always. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with station manager Mike Murphy, who's engineering this morning's Local Talk, and our Milford Township neighbor, Pat Schlerbaum, is here to help us greet the day and welcome you, our KHOI listeners. Also, KHOI's Sam Wormley has joined us as well, and we'll be visiting with him throughout the hour. I just want to give a big thank you to our listeners, those individuals and families who have so far supported KHOI with their monetary contributions. And as we wrap up our on-air portion this week of this autumn fund drive, I'd like to let you know that there's another way you can help support KHOI, your community radio station. Today only, Tuesday the 22nd of November, please consider shopping at Worldly Goods, which is located at 223 Main Street in downtown Ames. You just let the friendly staff know that you are there because of KHOI, and by doing so, a portion of the proceeds from any purchase you make will be forwarded to KHOI. So please consider this a way to get some early holiday shopping. By doing so, you will feel good knowing that you are supporting and helping two great organizations.
This morning and throughout our day, we will have abundant sunshine. We should reach a high of 47 degrees. Winds will be from the south-southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. This evening, skies will remain clear as winds will begin to diminish. We will experience a low near 22. Our sunrise occurs at 7:11 a.m. and this evening our sun will set at 4:49 p.m. The waning moon is a fingernail crescent. Tomorrow it will be a new moon. Currently it's 21 degrees Fahrenheit.
And KHOI's Sam Wormley is here this morning. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Mike.
What brings you out so early, that fingernail moon?
Well, yeah, the moon's exciting. The fact that it's going to be a sunny day is exciting. And the fact that we are trying to raise money to support our local community radio station brings me here this morning.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. So how would our listeners go about helping us out?
Well, Mike, they can become a member for just $60 a year. That's $5 a month or 16 cents a day. And there's really a couple of easy ways to do that. One is just to go to the website, khoifm.org, and press the donate button, follow the instructions, and it's very simple. Or they could just write a check to KHOI, Radio, KHOI Radio, 622 Douglas Avenue in Ames, Iowa, 50010. And we appreciate all the support we can have because community radio is your radio for you and the community. This connects to the community. We connect with each other this way through community radio. It's just a wonderful, wonderful enrichment to the heritage and the culture of our community.
So, Sam, you're a supporter of KHOI. How do you go about doing that?
Well, Mike, I actually went to my bank, actually online to my bank, and just set it up so that I would have a monthly contribution to KHOI Radio, and then I don't have to worry about it. I call it a sustaining membership. It is a sustaining membership, and I don't have to renew it periodically. It just happens every month. And the benefit to the station is that they have a known stream, a continuous stream of revenue, which really helps them do their planning in terms of paying the bills and producing the programs that we love to hear.
And when you say paying the bills, you're one of our volunteers. So the majority of us are, in fact, volunteers. So by what you mean, I assume that's things like keeping the station transmitter rental paid, the power that it takes to broadcast, those kinds of things?
Yes, Mike. Repair and maintenance and the power for the transmitter, the building, the equipment used to produce the radio stations, all of that is not free. We volunteer for free. We produce radio programs for free. but you still have to have that infrastructure to make it happen.
Okay. And when you mentioned sustainable members and membership, the positive about that is it has a steady income so that the station can budget for those necessities that are planned and also unplanned.
That's correct, Mike. Okay. When you have a known amount of income coming in, you plan accordingly.
Okay. Well, Sam, we'll visit with you a little bit later on in the program. Right now, I just want to let folks know, Pat, you know, I had a chance to visit Wild Birds Unlimited, and we normally play this towards the end of the month, and unfortunately, because of the political, you know, the voting, the that time of year, we hung on to it, and so we're going to play that interview right now.
Really looking forward to learning about feeding winter birds.
Okay.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
Todd Burris, Wild Birds Unlimited. Thanks for joining me, Todd.
Thanks, Mike.
What are we going to talk about today? Some winter residents?
Maybe some winter residents, birds that are starting to show up, a few of them that will be here for the duration of the winter or are coming through on their way somewhere else to spend the winter. Probably the one that a lot of people have been noticing is red-breasted nuthatch. Boreal bird, it's a cousin to the white-breasted nuthatch, but it's smaller, feistier, can be easily tamed to come take a seat out of your hand because they're very bold and probably two-thirds the size of a white-breasted nuthatch. Similar profile, they always look like they're headed downward and their head's upward. A little bit darker color than white breast, and then they've got a peach color belly.
And they've got that eye line.
Big white eye line.
Yeah.
That's a bird that I've been hearing people talk about seeing, and we've been seeing them in our yard. They like sunflower seeds primarily is what they're looking for this time of the year, but and peanuts.
I'll put peanut halves in one of the feeders that have my sunflower in that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even away from that feeder, and a little chickadee or a nuthatch will come. Yep. They're watching you.
Yep, exactly. That's a high-value food for them this time of the year. A lot of fat, a lot of protein, carbohydrates. So peanuts are really good seed to have out this time of the year. Everything that's going to come to your feeder practically is going to eat them. Even cardinals eat some peanuts this time of the year.
And there is another bird that really goes for them, at least the ones that are still in shell. I throw a handful out every day.
The blue jays.
They're picky if they have too many. They look for the big one first.
Yeah, you'll notice that with a lot of different birds. Nuthatches are one that you see it with quite a bit, or at least I have, that will pick up a seed. Looks like it's kind of checking it out, and then it'll throw it to the side. It'll pick up another one, throw it aside, finally grab one, and then fly off. I've read anyway that they can tell the difference in the weight of that seed, and they're essentially weighing it, picking up one, sometimes two, sometimes three, throwing them to the side until they find the one that feels just right to them, and then looking for the seed that is the heaviest, so it provides the most for the energy that they have to exert to get the food, get the most out of it. So,
but they don't necessarily eat that right away. Right.
They cache those things in bark. Under siding, we have fascia around our house that has areas for water drainage, and I will periodically see nuthatches hanging up underneath there, tucking them in there to save for a snowy day. But that does happen quite a bit at our place for whatever reason.
I have cedar siding, and when I first put it up, I tried to plug all of the holes because there are holes that run horizontal. If you don't plug those holes, insects will lay eggs or they'll crawl in there for the winter. Yep. And then the downies and harries show you where the holes that you missed, because they'll
make a little dot dash all the way across that. So you spend the next season patching and repainting.
Yeah, that happens more often than you would think. Yeah. People looking for remedies to that. And it's invariably cedar siding. There'll be insects behind that. There's also, I think, some of that siding actually has larvae already in it before when people get it.
Sure.
And it's in the wood, ingrained in the wood too. But typically the woodpeckers are either looking for the insects that are behind it, or they are actually seeing your siding as a potential home and are going to actually excavate a hole through that, thinking that they can get in there. In some cases, they can get behind there far enough that they could actually build a nest behind it. But
if there are insects in there and you get the sun heating that surface, they move, and the woodpeckers are going to hear that.
Yep, hear it and see it.
The one thing before plugging those holes, like you say, if that sheeting has been out for a while, a solitaire, wasps, and those kinds of things will be stuffing little grubs and laying an egg.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing to run a wire through that to kill all those, so that at least they're not moving and making that noise and attracting the birds.
Right.
Before you plug the hole.
Right. We try different things to try to deter them. Some are more effective than others, and sheet metal people will put up temporarily to try to stop woodpeckers from coming back to that same spot, or we'll hang monofilament or something like that that's moving around, and that is kind of a distraction to them. People have tried chimes, hanging those nearby, and we try diversionary feeding if they don't have feeders out. This is why it's important to keep some of the dead trees around as well, because those woodpeckers need cavities that they can excavate and live in trees, and dead trees are easier for them to excavate than a living tree.
Since we're talking about diversionary tactics, let's talk briefly about windows. Some folks don't set up their feeders until this time of year, and you want to see them, so they have a tendency to move them in close to the window, and if the birds are flushed, sometimes they're going to fly to the window, especially if they see a reflection of a tree or something.
Yeah.
They think they're flying into the woods.
Yeah.
Not that one thing's going to be any better than the other. I think it depends on the situation, the light. What works for some folks isn't going to work for others, but
right.
Give us a couple of examples of what to try.
Well, there's two things. There's migratory birds, which are not familiar with your yard or with the buildings that they're passing by, and those reflections are a death trap to them. We lose billions of birds every spring and fall migration in North America to window collisions. There are things that can be done to try to remedy that, anywhere from putting, you know, multiple stickers and things like that on it, to hanging at what are called Acopian bird savers, which is basically paracord spaced 4 inches apart, draped down from the top of the window casing to cover that, and it breaks up the pattern so the birds don't see that. Turning lights off during the migration is a good thing, because those birds fly toward the lights, and a lot of the migration takes place at night,
so
those birds are drawn to those lights and they hit windows. So there's things you can do that way. As far as for just your standard backyard bird setup, if you're going to put feeders out, recommend putting those feeders 2 to 3 feet max from your window. So the closer to the windows, the better. That's good for you. It's also good for the birds, because if for some reason they do get spooked or they do fly, if they hit that window, their chances of recovery are a lot greater, because the impact is not as great, as it can kind of bounce off of that and recover pretty easily. So you either want to be very close, 2 to 3 feet, or at least like 12 feet or farther away, so that it kind of just keeps them away from even coming over by the windows. 3 foot, 4 foot to about 10 foot area is kind of a kill zone for them. That's the area that it's most dangerous for them.
Sure.
Because if they get spooked there and fly toward the window, they've had the opportunity to gain speed, and it's usually fatal.
Now, have you had anybody talk about perhaps an accipiter, which is a bird that feeds on other birds like Cooper's hawks around here, or sharp-shinned hawks. Those are the two common ones for our area. Goshawk is the bigger of the bunch. Have you heard stories about those birds using a window? In other words, they'll come through, spook the birds off the feeder, and then if they see one fly into the window and get stunned, they come right back and try to pick that bird.
Yeah, they're crafty that way, I guess. I had an interesting experience here at the store one early evening. It was still light out, and I was outside, and I was going to bring something in, and I was facing the store in a window, and I bent over, and I felt this presence and a shadow coming, and all of a sudden I got hit and the window got hit, and it was a Cooper's hawk that had seen a sparrow that had flown over by me on the sidewalk, and I didn't even see the sparrow, and it saw it, and it was so locked in on that sparrow that it brushed me on the face and the shoulder and hit the window and stunned the sparrow, but the sparrow was fine. The Cooper's hawk didn't know what to do and just took off.
And you had to stay out of the game for a week because you had a concussion.
That's exactly right. Put me in concussion protocol, and I took a week off. That was really an interesting thing, how it would see that prey, and it was so
just
focused on it that it didn't even pay any attention to this big person right there. So
you were talking about the paracord being 4 inches apart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that would be for birds using the English unit. What about metric system? How do they know?
I refuse to answer that question.
Okay, other birds that spend the winter months here, you hear about snowbirds.
Mm-hmm. Other birds that are coming through right now in huge numbers are native sparrows.
Right.
Song sparrows, primarily at our place, it's been white-throated sparrows for the last week, and there are just huge numbers of them, mixed in with the juncos also, which are a sparrow, and they've been showing up for a couple weeks now, too. But the white-throated sparrows, they are unusual in that they actually vocalize kind of all year long. They don't necessarily just kind of quit singing like a lot of birds do.
They don't necessarily sing their breeding song, but you can hear maybe some of the juveniles are trying.
Yeah.
At least they're practicing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a neat little winter sound.
Yeah. I didn't realize this about white-throated sparrows. They have white throat.
Yeah.
But they have either white stripes or tan stripes that are on their head next to black stripes. What scientists have discovered is that the sparrows, and it doesn't matter if it's a male or female, if it has white stripes, they tend to be much more territorial. White-throated sparrows that have the tan-colored stripes next to the black tend to be much more nesting and foraging focused and raising their broods.
Okay.
And so they stay closer to the nest and are good at providing food and resources, but not so good at defending
the territory.
And what they have found is that, I think this is pretty universal, that like close to 95-96% of white-throated sparrows, that the opposite attracts. And so you always will have a pair where either the male or the female has the white stripe and the other one will have the brown stripe. And so they basically get the best of both worlds out of those, because you got one of the two that's more territorial to defend the nest. The other one is more focused on providing, getting insects and things like that to feed the young.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if that happens in any of the other bird species.
I don't know. Yeah. I would wonder if like white-crowned sparrows would be.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, you know, you think about white-throated sparrows with the white stripes. The native sparrow is the white crown that you think of. Mm-hmm. And of course, they look like they either are wearing a little soccer or a bicycle helmet.
Right.
That's what it reminds me of.
Right, yeah, exactly.
The other sparrow, our largest sparrow, the Harris sparrow, I'm seeing some of those
are
show
you seeing
up
some?
With the group. And I always thought that one should have been called the Lincoln sparrow because it looks like it's got a little beard, that little bib, dark bib.
Yep.
But the name was already taken by the Lincoln sparrow.
Right, yeah. I've wondered if they are more of a rural sparrow or not, or kind of more of a edge woodland sparrow.
Like you'd find in town.
Right. I see them occasionally, but not in numbers like I would if I were to go out to a park on the edge of town.
Yeah.
That is where I historically will see the most Harris's sparrows together migrating through. And so I don't know if there's something about the habitat, about what they're looking for, but they're fun to have around. They're really pretty. Have you been seeing any fox sparrows?
Often you would see them with this mixed flock, and they do the same thing. They look like they're doing a little dance. They're shoving the leaves around.
Yeah.
gleaning the litter,
yeah,
looking for insects and, yep, seeds and things like that.
Yeah,
I'm starting to see the American tree sparrow.
Sparrows are those little brown birds that people can't identify that just kind of get lumped into that category. But when you start actually, when you're able to watch them and see them, and if you've got optics and can see them closer and stuff, I mean, they're really beautiful.
Yeah.
Each species has its own uniqueness that's really beautiful about them. But you have to take the time to watch them and observe them and hopefully, you know, see them close enough to appreciate the differences.
There's one bird that occasionally we see down here that it's associated with the snow buntings.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get over their color.
Yeah.
For that. They look like snowflakes just falling all over the place.
Yep. And they are often with hornlarks and Lapland longspurs.
Right. And that's when we'll start seeing them, is when we're getting blowing snow out in the countryside.
Yep. And you'll drive down a gravel road or a highway, and you'll be startled by how many birds suddenly lift off of the edge of the road or whatever.
And usually mixed flocks.
Yep. And the hornlarks actually nest here in Iowa.
Right.
I don't think people maybe even notice them that much.
Yeah, because they disperse, for one thing. They're not flocked up. Yep. So I think that's part of it.
Yeah, but they're a neat little bird, too.
Essentially, all those sparrows are ground feeders.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to attract them, you've got to set up a feeding station that's low, that they can... Or leave lots of piles of leaves around the bases of your trees and things.
Right. Really, leaving those leaves or even mowing over the top of them and mulching them so that debris stays in the grass. It feeds the soil. It feeds a lot of microorganisms and insects and provides cover for them. And so you're doing your local ecosystem a favor by leaving some of that stuff out there rather than cleaning it all, and even leaving the stems and stalks of different plants, and worry about doing that, getting to that
in the spring,
because these sparrows are coming through and the juncos and things, and it's amazing how many are out there rifling through that you don't even see. You just see the plants moving and things like that, or the ground kind of looks like it's moving, and then they come up. But they're all looking for seeds that have, you know, come off of cone flowers or different kinds of weeds. And so that's my plug for this time of year is...
It's a refugia for those insects,
and
that's what attracts the birds.
Right.
So with that, Stephanie, what do we tell our listeners?
Remember your binoculars. Don't leave home without them.
And where is your store located?
213 Duff, right next door to Dutch Oven Bakery.
So feed yourself to feed the birds. Thank you.
I like that, Mike.
And if you're just joining us, it's 23 minutes after the hour. I'm Mike Metz, your host for the hour, and we just listened to the Wild Birds Unlimited Winter Feeder Bird Tips for this month. Thank you for staying with us, and I've got Pat Schlierbaum and Mike Murphy along with me here in the studio, and Sam Wormley has joined us once again. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Mike.
Go.
You know, Mike, I just wanted to say that I really enjoy listening to KHOI radio, and some of the nationally syndicated programs that we listen to are Democracy Now!, Letters in Politics, Big Table Science, and additionally, there are those programs from people that I know and respect that are produced locally. For example, Mary Richards reading on the community bookshelf, Don Alana about food and cooking and local agriculture, Broken Beyond with Michael White, Bob's 8-Track Garage Sale program. I think it's the only one in the world, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And Science Bites. Mike, Science Bites is a program that takes a bite out of science every week for our KHOI listeners, bringing them up to date on what's happening in the world of science. These programs are from people I know and trust. And why do they do it? It's a lot of work, and they don't get paid. They produce programs for our community radio to give back to all of us, to give to all of you. Local musicians, artists, folks passionate about life, giving to their local communities and beyond.
Sam, you're...
Say again, Mike?
Sam, this is Pat. You make a perfect example for the case to listen to local experts like yourself. You're an emeritus physics professor, and you come on with Science Bites and so willingly share things that are not only interesting, but important to realize, and always very timely with the events of the eclipses and just anything to do with meteorology. You and Mike Metz are just fabulous at providing local perspectives on things that have a worldly dimension. So go to the website, khoyfm.org. But how about even learning from people like Todd and Stephanie Burris with the Wild Birds Unlimited? And, you know, Todd is an outdoor writer. He has expertise that he shares so willingly. Great assets to the Ames community and a wonderful addition to the KHOY contacts, if you will.
Right. Well, we all give to our listeners, and so they can give back to us becoming a member, pledging khoyfm.org, press the donate button and follow the instructions, or you can send a check directly to KHOY Radio, 622 Douglas Avenue, Ames, Iowa, 50010. Basic memberships start at $60. That's, 16 cents a day? But whatever you feel good about giving, please give to your local community radio station, KHOY. And again, to be online, khoyfm.org, and press the donate button, follow the instructions, and you will help this station thrive.
Sam, we mentioned that this morning we're just one day away from a new moon. I was wondering if you could just briefly tell our listeners what might be going on the moon, and we can talk about that a little bit later, but just kind of, this is your moment to tease them a little bit.
Well, Mike, there's a new rocket ship, it's a vehicle to be able to transport human beings back and forth from the moon. It's called Artemis, and it is NASA's first segue back into being able to go to the moon. And that ship is going around the moon right now and will be there a few days before it comes back. It's designed to transport people and to take them down to the ground and back up and safely back to Earth, with the idea of eventually being able to colonize, to try to create a station on the surface of the moon. Very, so it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, very good. Okay, we'll visit with you a little bit more here later in the hour. And right now...
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
And yes, we're going to go to downtown Ames and visit with a couple of our folks, starting with Susan Guiasta. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little different than when we met the last time. There's not as much white stuff on the ground.
It is a little bit nicer. It was very pleasant out this morning. Beautiful sunrise. And I was walking past the pedestals at Moore Memorial Park this morning where I could read the story.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah.
I think it was just a couple weeks ago where we did the ribbon cutting on the story walk at Moore Memorial Park, where there are places where you can stop along the path and read a story.
Yes.
If you haven't had a chance to see it, it really is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've heard a few very positive comments about that, especially for families that are getting out with some of their kids to do that. So sounds like a great time.
Yeah, it is great. Just a couple of quick notes before we get to the guests I brought today.
Okay.
Tonight is a city council meeting.
Right.
We think we talked about that last week. Mm-hmm. Tonight's the last council meeting of November. Not a huge agenda, but you can always get that agenda online and follow along. You can attend a council meeting in person at City Hall, 515 Clark Avenue. You can watch it streaming off our website, or you can watch it off Facebook or YouTube streams from City of Ames.
Okay. Now, City of Ames, with the holiday coming up, I am assuming there's some closures.
Good reminder. Yes, of course. City Hall will be closed for Thanksgiving, both this Thursday and this Friday. So you have until tomorrow this week to get any city business done. Otherwise, we do have a lot of services available online, cityofames.org. Otherwise, we'll see you back on Monday.
Okay, that sounds great. Now, you say you have a guest with us this morning.
Yes, I do. We've had a lot of discussion on this program about our waste-to-energy facility, the resource recovery plant. I brought with me the superintendent of that division, Bill Schmidt.
Well, good morning, Bill.
Good morning. How are you today?
We're doing well here this morning. Before we start, what are your hours as far as the holiday? Do you have close times, I would assume, to let the folks spend time with their families?
Yes, we will be closed on Thursday, but we will be open for incoming waste on Friday and Saturday from 7 to 3:30 on Friday and 8 to noon on Saturday.
All right, very good. Yeah, we need to talk about, with the holidays coming up, I'm sure you maybe get a few more items than maybe other times of the year. I have to say, I was driving downtown a day or so, that was 2 days ago. I noticed there was one of these fake Christmas trees laying alongside the road, I assume, to be picked up. Are you seeing that yet, or is that something that you will probably see more of later in the season?
We're starting to see some already. I think some people are dragging out, they're getting out their Christmas tree and lights and going, you know, this looks a little sorry. We want something new or bigger. We're starting to see some Christmas items show up in the trash already that people no longer want.
So. Oh, okay. Well, it's interesting because some of us will, when the season is over and folks leave their live, you know, their cut trees out there, some of us will collect those to use as potential habitat for critters. And I was wondering, I suppose if we collected a bunch of fake trees, we'd have a bunch of fake critters.
That current critter will be, I don't know for sure if you'd want to promote that or not.
Okay. Well, what's going on down at the recycling?
We've got a number of things going on. As you said, we have modified hours this week. We have a no-charge leaf day coming up this Saturday.
Okay.
The weather's going to be nice this week and on Thanksgiving and Friday, so if people want to get out there and do some yard work, they certainly could. But we will have a leaf day at the Yardway site from 8 until 4 on Saturday, November 26th. And then our last day will be next Saturday, December 3rd, again for leaves only. And that's at 400 Trail Drive. You can go south from Lincoln Way onto Dayton Avenue and then take a right onto Southeast 5th Street and go north on Trail. You can get rid of your items there and then you can exit the site and go on over to Lincoln Way. And if you don't really want to rake your leaves, there's nothing that says that you have to. You can certainly leave the leaves in the yard and make some habitat for pollinators. Mm-hmm. You can put them on top of some of your planting beds or maybe leave a pile back in the corner of the yard, and that's a good way for pollinators to overwinter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's usually the area where I might be walking around the house frequently. I'll rake a little bit, but I have the luxury of being able to live out where I don't have a lot of neighbors complaining about my lawn other than the big weed patch called the prairie. So I leave a lot of habitat for critters, pollinators, that kind of thing. And really, when that breaks down, the leaves in particular, that's the way the tree brings a lot of minerals up that normal plants could not have access to. And so if you mulch those are a great source of minerals.
They certainly are. They really go right back and do a great job of rebuilding that soil, and it's wonderful. One other program we've got going on right now is a great pumpkin disposal. On the north side of our facility at 410 East 2nd Street, we've got several totes out there, and people can deposit their pumpkins, gourds, squash, Maybe they had some corn stalks for display. We'll take all those items and get them composted and turned back into a good soil amendment. We'll be doing that through the end of the month. So if you want to bring those on down, we'd appreciate it. We've had tremendous support with the program. And since we started the program in 2017, we've had over 23 tons of pumpkins drop off to us, which is just fantastic. I mean, we're keeping those out of landfill and keeping them from generating methane.
Yeah, that sounds like, you know, not that Mary Rankin's here to defend herself, but one of those totes should be in the shape of a pie tin, and you could just put those recycled pumpkins in it.
And Bill, my understanding, better there than going through the your recapturing of energy at the recycling plant. Better to keep that stuff separate.
Yes, for sure. We really appreciate that because it's so wet and it's really, you think it might be beneficial, but that has to be dried out before it can be burned. So we spend almost more energy drying it out to burn it than what we do by just getting it turned into compost. We really appreciate the support we've got from the community to drop those pumpkins and gourds off. And we have some very talented artists in the community who we see with some of the pumpkins that we get dropped off there.
So, Bill, what, you know, we've had some situations where we've had the recycling of furniture and other possessions and things like that that have eliminated that from the waste stream. It's been repurposed. Do you have any figures or anything to share with our listeners about the success of that program?
Sure. One of the biggest things we have on that is Rummage Rampage that we do in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
This year, we kept over 143,000 pounds of material we were able to divert from the landfill. We raised over $48,000, almost $49,000 for nonprofit agencies, which is a very good result. But as we look back over the 7 years that we've run the event, we've had 576,000 pounds diverted from the landfill and raised almost $160,000 for nonprofits in the community that allows them to serve the community and help them with the missions that they're doing.
Yeah, so, you know, some of our listeners just are realizing that we're doing that. And the recycling and reclamation center, not only is that a way to raise some funds and keep some things out of the stream, but I know when you get a load, there's a lot of sorting that goes on. Can you maybe describe just a few of those steps for our listeners?
Sure. When things come into us here at the facility, we sort through. We make sure that there are nothing in the load that's going to hurt the facility or injure any of our employees. We look for propane tanks and cylinders. We ask people to bring those to us. We'll take them anytime we're open at no charge. We pull those items out. And unfortunately, as we talked a little about that furniture, that's not a useful item for us to make fuel for the power plant. So those items get pulled out, and when we pull them out, we use a giant end loader with a bucket with a clam on it, and we just take that and we grab it out of the pile, and I mean, it's thoroughly destroyed by the time that we get done with it. So that's why we really encourage people to, you know, we do Rummage Rampage in the summertime for 1 week, but the other 51 weeks out of the year, we've got Salvation Army, Goodwill, Habitat for Humanity, Overflow Thrift Store, other options are available with Craigslist, Facebook. There's a lot of opportunities to get those items that still have useful life back into the community and give them to someone that can get use out of them. That's what we really encourage people to reduce the amount of items that they're throwing away, and that's one way that they can really do that. We take those items and we grind it up. We separate out the metal. One thing I didn't talk about is we pull out almost 2,000 tons a year of metal out of our process, and we recycle that also. So that's another thing that we recycle. And then the burnable portion goes over to the City of Ames Power Plant, where it's used to generate electricity.
Okay. Now, I know you've had places where folks can come and can they dispose of their used oil, for example. Do you have a drop-off for that?
Certainly, yes. We have a household hazardous waste drop off, and they can call us 239-5137 to make an appointment. And with that, we'll do household chemicals, cleaners, lawn chemicals, fertilizer, stuff like that. oil, antifreeze, fluorescent light bulbs. We'll take those items anytime we're open, Monday through Friday, 7 to 3:30, and Saturday from 8 to noon at 410 East 2nd Street. And we'll make sure that those items get recycled and reclaimed properly.
Okay. And I think you do that as well with batteries, that type of material.
Correct. Yes, we'll take rechargeable batteries. We'll take those at no charge also. We also take, as I said, propane tanks and cylinders. Mm-hmm. Any sharps or lancets that somebody may have, we'll take those items at no charge to get those properly taken care of. And we also take American flags that may be a little too tattered to display properly. We'll take those and we'll work with the local veterans organizations to make sure that they get retired properly.
Yeah, that's a great reminder. I know that, especially around Veterans Day and Flag Day and things like that, you know, for a while, the Boy Scouts, I know, used to collect those and take them down to the veterans groups as well. So, like you say, be retired properly. Another thing that maybe we haven't talked about for a while is glass recycling. What are we? What can we do about that?
That's a great question. We have receptacles at the Fairway Grocery Stores on the west side of Aldi, behind Wheat's Field, at the Hy-Vee gas stations, and at a lot of the communities around. We have them in Story City, Roland, Maxwell, Nevada, Fairway, Huxley, Slater, and people can drop off their bottle of glass that they've got. We're averaging about 250 tons a year of glass that we're able to recover and recycle. We'll take anything that you buy at the grocery store that came in glass bottles, perfume bottles, nail polish bottles, any of those items, candles, we'll take any of that. They don't have to be completely empty with the nail polish or candles. We can take those, you know, take care of, and we'll make sure that gets recycled and handled properly.
Okay. All right. So, and with that glass, how about, you know, if you forget a metal lid or something like that, will that be separated out? We don't have to worry about that, or?
Yes, that is correct. With the vendor that we use down in Kansas City, they've got magnets that they can pull those items out, and then they recycle them, too. They don't just throw them away. They make sure that those get recycled and get handled properly.
Okay. I know when I've dropped mine off, I usually rinse things out because, you know, those containers are sitting there for a little while, and some of that would attract yellow jackets and things. You don't need to have that as something to fight, but really appreciate that ability to be able to recycle that glass. And seems like glass is one of those things that you can just recycle repeatedly.
That's very true. Glass can be recycled infinitely. There's no degradation of the quality of it or the imperfections that are brought forward. It's a really good product that can be recycled and reused. We've got a really good relationship with the company that we work with in Kansas City, and the vast majority actually gets used to be made in fiberglass insulation. Mm. And it greatly reduces the amount of energy that they need to make the insulation, because it's much easier to take glass and melt it down than it is to take the raw components and mix them and heat them and get them into the molten stage.
Very good. Well, in the remaining minute we've got, is there anything you'd like to highlight before we bid you adieu?
The biggest thing I'd like to highlight is to talk about batteries. Please make sure you're bringing any rechargeable batteries to us. We'll be happy to take those at no charge. And then just as you get through Thanksgiving and into the holiday season, keep in mind of how much trash and waste you generate. Maybe there's a way that you can generate less by what you're serving on the table. I mean, it's always nice and convenient to use paper plates and plastic silverware, but if you wash the plates and silverware afterwards, then you don't have to throw anything away. You know, those little things that we can do to hopefully reduce the amount of waste and trash that we generate.
Very good. Well, Bill, have a great holiday season this weekend coming up. You know, don't fall asleep in front of that television watching football too long. I know a lot of folks do that, but this is a good time. The weather's going to be great, so I would encourage folks to get out and enjoy the outdoors as much as possible. So, and that would make us think about reducing our need. You know, keep in mind why we want to recycle and why we want to cut back on our carbon footprint and those kinds of things.
Very true. I couldn't have said it better.
Okay. Bill Schmidt, thank you. You're with us this morning from the Resource Recovery Plant. It's Bill Schmidt, the superintendent. Have a great Thanksgiving, Bill.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. And Sam Wormley is back and has rejoined us. And Sam, we were talking a little bit about Artemis, and it has, my understanding is it's already made at least one circuit around the lunar surface. It hasn't touched down, of course. It's just revolving around it. I don't know how many times before it returns. Do you have anything else to tell our listeners, or anything else you might pull out of your pocket of knowledge?
Well, Mike, if people will remember what the Apollo astronauts traveled to the moon and back in, it was a ship designed so that it could come back into the Earth's atmosphere and automatically orient itself. And when I say automatically, I mean just the geometry of it was such that it would provide its own directional entry into the atmosphere, providing the heat shield from the friction with the air, and land in the ocean. And that was a very safe way to bring astronauts home. And this new ship is designed very similarly and comes back the same way, dropping down to the ocean. You don't have to worry about wings and tiles and all of that sort of thing like we did on the space shuttle. So it's a really true and tried design, and this one is designed to be able to carry several crew members to and from the moon, to and from the surface. And so it's a new capability based on the old Apollo program to get our presence back on the moon. And the whole idea of going back to the moon is to be able to explore it more, perhaps set up a ground base to hunt for water, to be able to see what kind of minerals might be useful to us. And so it's the next step in lunar exploration.
Okay. Sam, how do we, you know, we're talking to our listeners about this, and KHOI presents not only what we're talking about today, talking to some of our local folks here, what's going on in Ames, but we also... you know, our program, the Science Bites, may not be necessarily local all the time, but there are effects that it has, if not directly, indirectly. How do we go about supporting our locally produced programs?
Well, KHOI listeners can go to our website, khoifm.org, and press the donate button and follow the instructions. That's one way. Another way is just to mail a check to KHOI Radio, 622 Douglas Avenue, Ames, Iowa, 50010. And Mike, you were talking about Science Bites. What we try to do with Science Bites is to share with our KHOI listeners our excitement for all kinds of science, the biological sciences, the physical sciences, the astronomical sciences, and so on, what's happening with the climate, viruses, and so on. In other words, keeping them up to date on what's happening in scientific research and the science that affects our daily lives.
Very good. Let's talk a little bit about some of our other local programs that we offer our listeners. And what I'm thinking back is we used to call this Tune In Tuesday, and we'd review some of those programs because, frankly, Tuesday seems like we've got a lot of local production going on. I know, for example, Eric B's KHOI Jukebox. I know we've all been a guest of Eric's, and not only a guest, but kind of I consider a victim, but it's really an interesting thing because Eric comes from a background and he knows a lot about the music that he plays on that program. He produces that. Eric is our operations manager here. And, you know, programs that follow Amy Goodman's Democracy Now. You were talking about a nationally syndicated program, but we've got a number of programs like Tom Russell's All Things Piano that comes on here. I know Pat has recently been working with Tom. And, of course, Donna Lana Kitchen, we've been talking about that off and on. Gosh, we all need to eat, and we need to know where it comes from. And folks in the area, we want to support our locally produced agricultural folks. A lot of people out there during farmers market and that kind of thing. And then we've mentioned Mary Richards Community Bookshelf. That happens 3 days out of the week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, right after the noon hour. Gosh, what am I missing, Pat? We have in the evenings, we have the heart-to-heart messages that Anna Magnuson comes back on. Is there anything else I've missed?
Well, these are award-winning productions. Lana Donna Kitchen Show is a delightful, good to point out that they have received national acclaim for their program. Just the research they do on any topic, it's not unlike the research that you and Sam do. It seemed like people first have an initial attraction to be on the radio, and it kind of grows from there, and then you start sharing information, and there's value-added opportunities once you're established with any program that you have on this Tune In Tuesday.
Yeah.
And something else that kind of comes to mind, not only are you supporting local programming and that complements all the national programs, but you have a chance to join the group that are giving memberships as a gift this giving time of year. And at Thanksgiving, it's good to have some gratitude in your heart. Yeah. I know one thing that's apparently we're all, those of us on fixed income receiving Social Security, we're going to have a cost of living increase in 2023 of 8.7%. So there's an opportunity right there to share the wealth. If things are such that you can afford another $1 or $2 a month through the sustaining membership program, by that I mean you can go to your bank and get an automatic deduction. Going to KHOI, a few dollars, it seems like there's a trade-off to everything. We're not promoting commercial advertisements, but we do have to make these appeals to go to the website khoyfm.org and become a member.
Yeah, and I know that you and we're all sustaining members here, and I want to throw this back to Sam and add to the flavor of this conversation.
Well, Mike, those of us who are have to take a minimum distribution at the end of the year from investments and normally pay taxes on that money, if you give to charitable organizations like KHOI-FM, you don't pay that tax on that. So that's really a wonderful way for people to make contributions for a lower cost to them.
That's a very good point. And I haven't quite reached that, so I'll have to visit with you sometime, Sam, about how to go about doing that. I know I'm getting close, so...
well,
but that's something.
The color of your hair just doesn't go with being old enough to do that yet.
Well, that's beside. It's just good genetics or different genetics. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and Mary Richards' reading of the community bookshelf, she just reads local authors and gets permission from those authors to read on the air. That's a wonderful contribution to the community.
Yeah, and by community and local authors, it's local authors and folks throughout the state of Iowa, because I know, you know, we cover, well, you know, our radius is about, depending upon which direction you drive, about 40 miles from the transmitter. So we cover not only our local community right here, but the surrounding counties. And because you can stream KHOI, there are folks, I believe we've gotten some folks' response from other countries that mm-hmm. listen. In fact, our noon program, that we're kind of showcasing yeah. Ukraine with Svetlana, we've talked to folks from Ukraine. So we're international, Sam.
We are. And it does, and when you travel, all you need is a connection to the internet, and you can listen to khoifm.org.
Yeah. It's too bad that my transmission isn't as good as my reception, because I can at least listen in different places when I'm on the road traveling. But trying to get word back, sometimes my transmission just isn't strong enough. So,
Mike, I wanted to say something about being a sustaining member.
Yes.
To be a sustaining member or a friend of KHOI, you could pledge $5, $10, $20, whatever you want, dollars a month. Just making that automatic from your bank or a credit card. And not only does that really help with the budgeting process at KHOI, but it also makes you feel good because you don't have to worry about renewing that pledge every year. It's automatic. That's the beauty of being a sustaining member of this radio station.
Okay. Now, Sam, we later this afternoon at 4:30 will be our Science Bites program. Is there anything you can, in the last 30 seconds or so, tell our listeners about what we might be doing? I know Eric B. is going to be joining us.
Well, Eric has stepped up to the challenge of challenging us, Mike. He's going to ask us questions in many fields of science to see if we know what we're talking about. And that'll be fun.
Yeah, and what will be fun is finding out if Eric really knows anything about different fields to ask questions. I'm just getting a little dig in before he gets me this afternoon during the jukebox, KHOI jukebox. So I hope Eric heard that. So, well, Sam, it's been great to have you join us today. Once again, if you could remind our listeners how they can help support us.
They can go online to khoifm.org and press the donate button, follow the instructions, or they can write a check, send that check to KHOI Radio, 622 Douglas Avenue, Ames, Iowa, 50010.
Okay. Thanks, Sam, for joining us and for helping inform our listeners on how they can support KHOI. I want to thank station manager Mike Murphy for engineering this morning's local talk, and I want to also thank my good neighbor Pat Schlierbaum for joining us. Tuesdays just aren't the same when he's not here. And I got to give a tug of the KHOI toque to producer Lynn Carey for all of her assistance in production. And like I said, you've heard folks from KHOI's Sam Wormley. We also heard from Todd Burris and a little bit from Stephanie Burris down at Wild Birds Unlimited this morning. Then Susan Guiasta, the public information officer from the city of the city of Ames, along with Resource Recovery Plant Bill Schmidt, joined us earlier today. I've been your host, Mike Metz.
Please consider becoming a member. Yes, become a member and make KHOI your community radio station. With your financial support, go to our website at khoifm.org and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member. Remember that you can also hear this online at khoifm.org and find links to our guests and information heard during this program. This morning, following Democracy Now!, please stay with KHOI for Tom Russell's All Things Piano at 9 a.m. Our theme song, as always, is backtracked by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And see you again
on the radio.
KHOI, Story City in Ames.